around the NFL podcast is gonna ride till they can't no more.
Welcome to another edition of the Around the NFL podcast. My name is Dan Hansis. I'm joined in a room overflowing with heroes. Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling, Colleen Wolf, and Greg Rosenthal. What is up, boys and girls?
Hey, Dan.
I got the horses in the back.
All right.
Get it? It was a callback to the drop.
Nailed it. Oh, man. I think I sense all of us are a little bit still in a fog. I can only speak for myself, but I sense it with others here as well. Mm. Still coming off the high slash hangover of the Chris Wessling, Lakeisha Jackson, excuse me, the Mr. and Mrs. Christopher Wessling, which, by the way, sounds a little sexist. Why does Lakeisha lose her name in that spot?
That's where we're starting with this?
Is she changing her name?
She was super excited.
No, not the last name thing, but Mr. and Mrs. Wessling.
Sure. Oh, yeah. Yeah, you're right.
Yep.
I mean, it seems a little antiquated.
She put on that jean jacket at the after party at Huckapoo's with the wedding dress that had Mr. Wessling, Wessling on the back of it. I mean, mm-hmm. Whew.
It was a great wedding on Tybee Island in Georgia. A lot of fun. We all got in on Friday, and it was basically a 72-hour party. And Wes, you are now a married man after a beautiful ceremony. A lot of tears were shed. Happy tears.
I cried. I saw a lot of grown men whose lips were quivering during during both of the vows. They were so, so good.
Well, I figure we earned those tears. We went through a lot together, and there was nothing fake or inauthentic about the vows. So I think that's what hit people hard.
I looked around, and any male that was not on the cusp of crying with the quivering lip, just to like human train wreck, human train wreck, nothing inside.
He's garbage.
Human train wreck. How could you not be?
Yeah, we almost had to carry Greg out of there.
I'll cry at most weddings. So this one, forget about it. I was just with Keisha walking down the aisle because you know that what that moment's like for her. But the vows.
Well, you weren't walking down the aisle. Well, just to make clear what you just
said. No, okay. Watching her walk down the aisle. I mean, Wes is a great writer. Yeah, he's known for it. But I don't know. That's maybe the best thing I've ever heard Wes write. And for him being able to deliver that through his own tears, it was a struggle.
It
for
was
Wes.
Hard because the first couple of minutes, it could have gone either way. It could have been a catastrophe.
Your
it could have been undeliverable mess.
It was at a different timbre, but you could tell how much thought you put into the words. And shout out to Were those Keisha's friends or cousins?
It was the cousins.
I appreciate
their friends.
So much.
Take your time.
Who said, take your time, King?
Yeah.
And it calmed everyone down.
It was a cousin and the boyfriend of someone on Lakeisha's family side. And not only did they keep everybody under control during the wedding, because Lakeisha lost her composure for a moment as well. And someone shouted out, take your time, Queen. And then you got to take your time, King, which was a big moment for you.
I heard it, and it helped compose myself and reel me in, and I was like, all right, somebody's on my side out there.
Yeah. So
we're all on your side.
Everybody else is someone. Like,
this sucks.
The lone voice.
Ooh, the cancer guy. But then you go to the reception, and I don't know if we've talked about this, but right now everybody's in a haze. The first like 20, 30 minutes so from, because we're wearing suits, it was a very hot and humid weekend in Tybee. And we were on this armory, this old building, centuries-old building, and the sun beating down after the service and, you know, an emotional service after going through the photos. When you finally got back to your chair, you kind of felt like a little spent physically, and it took the help of my friend Jack Daniels and Mr. Morgan and not Tito's, but they had John Absolute there. To get me back to life, because it was a hot weekend in those suits. And then the hype men, this is the other people that stepped up in the reception. The same guys that are the Queen and King guys, they were on the dance floor with like the R. Kelly towel, like, and they were dancing around and getting everybody hyped up. And then Lakeisha did her Drunken Love by Beyonce.
Oh, my God. That was so good.
Grind on West, which was one of my favorite, if not my favorite, wedding moment of all time,
ever.
Period.
Yeah, well, it's a weird situation. Well, first of all, Joe and Fred are their names. They're great guys.
Joe and Fred. Perfect.
Who had the friends. Cigar all night that wasn't smoking.
I think it was
just had
Fred.
It as a prop.
Those guys were great. And they actually helped me with my dancing to the point where they were moving my limbs for me. Keisha is one of the best dancers I've ever seen. She
yes,
danced
she
in college, and I have no, you know, I've never heard a beat or a rhythm in my life.
It's you had at one moment on the dance floor, more than a moment, where they were helping he was helping you directly with Lakeisha.
When I had my arms behind my head.
That was, I was looking at saying, I could never do what he's doing right now. Good job by Wes.
They were actually moving, Fred and
Joe
were actually moving Wes's head. Like and the arms and the legs.
They were breakout stars of the
afternoon.
Wait, was
this the during
afternoon?
The chariot? Not during the chariot. I remember
that
Dan
was,
at
chair
the
dance was different.
Dan at the time was dance. Delighted. Just he wanted to see, like, you didn't know what to do with your hands during that.
Yeah. Oh, I have. I mean, I've never been in that situation.
Yeah. It was amazing. I have about like 10 seconds of it on Instagram but I think everyone had to take their phones.
No, I was like a kicker thinking about the kick. With the game on the line, I wasn't doing what came natural.
I thought two other quick breakout stars were the bartender and I don't know if it's his wife or who it is.
They've been married 61 years.
Yeah,
wow.
They were both born in the early 1900s and were high octane servers of drink.
Her name, by the way, it was Billy and Ruth, but Ruth said everybody calls her grandma. Which is very Tybee vibe. I told Wes at Huckapoo's after the reception that I understand Wes even more now after going to Tybee and seeing the vibe of the island and the people and why you fit in so well there, because it is a really fun place.
Huckapoo's was everything that I dreamed it would be. Like, more than it. It was so awesome. It was like, it was one of my favorite places with the Christmas lights inside and then your name on the ceiling and everybody there. It was so fun.
Now, everything's just a little bit off center on the island. Everything's just a little bit quirky, and Huckapoo's is the quirkiest place I've ever been.
And it's exactly how I imagined it to be. Like, right. But I had been hearing about Huckapoo's for years, and we had called it on the show many times. And when I walked in, I was like, yes, this is exactly how my brain had processed what this place would look like. Right down to the couches in front of the TV, and it must be a
meaning
great place.
It delivered like it was. It lived up to the
no.
The
in my mind, I hated it. So I
no, you did not have fun. Yeah.
I thought it was terrible. But right down to the couches in front of the TVs, and the fact
there
that
are
they
some
just,
stories about those couches I could tell off the air.
Oh, I'm sure.
No.
Do they need to be replaced desperately? Is that what you're saying?
I wouldn't get too comfortable with them.
Dan also gets great. MVP for Friday night for ordering a pizza early on in the night, man. And then running it back to the house and then coming back to the bar. So then when we all came home hungry at whatever time,
yes.
There was pizza that was already there.
Our house, that is up. A better move.
Our
I
house
know.
Was a 3-minute walk away, and it was a great house where Colleen, Ricky Hollywood, Ricky's friend, who else was there?
Tiffany Blackman,
Mark, Simone, my wife.
Cedric?
Kate. The name slipped me for a second, but it came back. And the fact that we were so close to Huckapoo's, that made it great too. And there were a lot of good times in the house as well, including late Saturday night where Mark had a good time Saturday night, and he had disappeared behind his bedroom door. We're like, oh, did we lose Mark?
It was called sleeping, but yeah.
Did we lose Mark? You couldn't have been in too deep a sleep. And I say, I know how to get him out. And I took the speaker, the Bluetooth speaker, and put it right up against the wall and blasted. There was only one song I knew would wake Mark up, Karma Chameleon by Culture Club. And I think this is on video. I kid you not. Mark was up and bounding down the hallway within 5 seconds.
Well, you say I was not in too deep of sleep until you also were kicking the door while blasting Boy George. So it's like I have one option because this is going to continue until I emerge. So
yeah,
I did.
True,
you know,
too.
We've been through this before, Dan.
That's true. That all checks out.
I also discovered Lay's crispy taco flavored potato chips. Oh my God. I had no idea that was a thing.
They did a nice job with that.
Mm-hmm.
What was it like from your experience, your vantage point, Wes, sort of having all of your life show up on this island that had sort of been yours, but now it's like Keisha's family, your family, you know, all your brothers, everything?
Well, the first couple of days, you're nervous because you want to make sure people are having a good time. You want to make sure they like this island that you love so much. You want to make sure that they're all getting the love and the attention, You know, you bring people from afar, and we didn't have any choice but to have a destination wedding because she's from St. Louis, I'm from Cincinnati, we work in Los Angeles. But there's some kind of, like, conscientious responsibility that goes with making sure everybody has a good time when you take them from one coast and bring them to another. But I think right around Friday and Saturday, we had been in a day or two by then, and I was just like, you know what, I'm just going to have fun. Let it go, enjoy it, and see what happens. And I could tell as the weekend was going along that everybody was having a good time and I had nothing to worry about.
Hard not to there.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's built so everyone has a good time. I want to thank Rosie and Wayne, my dear friends, who are happy to host whenever I come in town, and they just make everybody feel so welcomed anyway.
Yeah, Laney's Tavern
bar.
Is their garage bar where a lot of
garage goals.
A lot of cornhole is played. They've got, I mean, it's a nicer bar than any bar on the island, basically. It's in their garage.
We should tie up that loose end of the cornhole battle. Nick Wessling did a lot of chirping. I was expecting a dominant performance. And he did defeat me in what essentially was my warm-up game. I call it my calibration game. And then when the real action started, 2-on-2, I outpointed him, but my teammate, you know, S the bed, we lost. Then Nick collapsed.
Not me,
Wes.
I want to point out.
Yeah, not good.
I was not available.
Then Wes beat Nick in a 18-17 shootout with the score 18-17, won that game. And then, of course, Greg, late night, Huckapoos, after the wedding.
The reality is the final cornhole game played, Dan and I took care of business and beat Nick and Tiffany Blackman. Mm. And you can say, oh, okay, is Tiffany Blackman like a newcomer? No, like... It was a tough board to put the cornhole. We were all fairly even on at that moment, and Dan outpointed Nick for sure by a few, and I pointed.
Well, I think you properly undersold the 1-on-1 matchup between you and Nick Wessling. Which, the result is out there on Twitter if you want to search for it.
Anybody that knows how cornhole works, you need to have some warm up and get into the flow
right.
things. That was my first game of the whole weekend. Nick had thrown 47 games, I believe, the day before. But if he wants to take that as his win, and he probably will, that's
that's
it.
Fine. But they, but on the final game, I think they had a 15-10 lead, and we just ran 11 straight to say bye.
There's another way that cornhole works. You talk about the times when you played well, not the times when you got out.
All right. So great. It was a great time, a memorable time, a weekend that will not be forgotten.
Perfect wedding weekend.
I feel like we'll be talking, we're going to be talking about this wedding for the rest of the
podcast. There's so many things.
For this podcast history.
So many things I learned when I came in had happened that I don't even know happened
right.
because I'm off in a different
That's
direction.
How weddings work. Yeah. When you're getting married, this whole other ecosystem is around you that you're not even aware of. On the plane ride, and it was a long ride connecting through Minneapolis back to L.A., and my phone and Emily's phone was just blowing up the entire time with photos and videos that some have no memory of them ever happening. And I'm still going through those. It was a great weekend.
And you and Ricky are the side MVPs for rescheduling our show from yesterday to today.
Yes.
I don't think that would have
needed that.
Worked on any level.
No, we wouldn't have had Wes, which was
definitely not
a big loss.
Yeah.
Kind of need him.
That kind of worked out. It was a happy accident. All right, let's get into the NFL picture. And if you're complaining too much, oh, you're talking too much about the wedding, you're an idiot. You're a fool.
Oh, if anything, we're not talking enough. I think they want a whole show. It'll be sprinkled.
Maybe we'll
this
save
is just
it
part
for
one.
The wedding podcast that is just a 55-minute deep dive on all things Tybee weekend. But let's get to the rest of the world of the NFL. And to do that, it's going to be a supersized edition of news.
It wasn't the guy that got burned up. And I'm disappointed in every person who would actually say that was me, because if you watch that person run, they're a total non-athlete. Total non-athlete.
That's a great point. I thought that. I was like, why is he running like a weirdo?
I call BS. We talked about this. That was Aaron Rodgers talking about his Game of Thrones cameo, and there was all over the internet. Everybody thought there was this image of a guy running down what looked like some type of overhang to get away from dragon fire, and then he gets lit up and presumably killed, this character. Everyone thought it was Aaron Rodgers. Rodgers says it's not him. I say it is him because what I was talking about last week, this gif that was going to live on forever every time Aaron Rodgers struggled and Khalil Mack had 3 sacks of Aaron Rodgers in the first half, bang, throw up the gif of Aaron Rodgers being lit on fire. Here's the look of Aaron Rodgers running through from his offensive line and the Bears pass rush. No. What he's doing is, that wasn't me. You can't use that gif of me. I don't buy it.
Nailed it.
Yeah. I don't buy it.
But that this person truly was running like a person who has never run in his life.
Yes, Aaron Rodgers.
He's like an amazing athlete and a runner.
I love the show. I still have no idea where he was in.
It sounds
he's in a lineup of soldiers. Yeah, that is the actual photo of him.
The reporters kept asking questions, and then some. One of them said, "Was that you near the tower or whatever?" And then he was just kind of like, you know, he didn't answer, but that it was clearly.
But to Dan's point,
it was just like in a lineup of soldiers.
To clarify definitively that it's not him prevents him months and years and decades of that happening. So I like that strategy.
Trying to defuse a situation that he did not foresee that could be worked used against him. So now he's proactively trying.
I think you've cracked the case.
I'm still going to use the gift, by the way. He can't stop me from doing it. All right, let's get into the news. And there's so much because. We put up a show Wednesday afternoon last week, and this is our first show since then. I can't remember last time we went this long without an episode. So we have, and obviously there was a very good reason for it, we have so much to get to. And let's start with the release of one of the best defensive players of the decade. Gerald McCoy has been cut loose by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers after 9 seasons with the club. The team announced it on Tuesday, 31 years old, and had 3 years remaining on his contract. Was owed $13 million in 2019, but he was released, and Tampa Bay was able to wipe his entire salary away from the cap. Jason Licht, the Bucs general manager, Greg, said that this was a very difficult decision personally and professionally, but obviously with Bruce Arians on and McCoy maybe not the same guy he was 3 or 4 years ago, the decision was made for a clean slate on the defensive line.
I'm surprised more teams don't do moves like this where they see a guy out there in Ndamukong Suh that they're going to sign to replace Gerald McCoy. And I think McCoy would have stayed on the roster if Suh wasn't out there. And they basically say, this guy's a better fit for what our new defense wants to do. He's maybe going to be a little less money. And so it stinks for McCoy, who is still playing at a pretty high level, had a ton of hurries, a ton of hits. A year ago, like is a very much an above average starting defensive tackle. And even though he's, you know, for Bucs fans, it's sort of sad. I mean, McCoy's a good player, but you don't want – he is the best player that the franchise has had over the last decade pretty easily. And he's very beloved in the community and all of that. So it's a sad way to say goodbye, but I think they're just getting a guy that fits.
It's still a somewhat inglorious end, though, because it was like following weeks of Bruce Arians kind of talking him down to some degree. His name was whispered as a trade candidate. No one obviously wanted to pay that salary. And then you're replaced by the guy that came a pick before you in the 2010 draft.
But it's a guy in Suh that, I mean, they're just different players. They're looking for like a run stopper in the middle of their line, and that's what, you know, they want to do.
And it works out great for Todd Bowles, because Todd Bowles tried to get him when he was with the Jets, and now he actually does land him in Ndamukong Suh here.
I'm not seeing any money on Suh. He signed a $14 million deal with the Rams, a one-year deal last year. Obviously, he's not sniffing that. Otherwise, why would Tampa Bay pay more for Suh than they were for McCoy, who was due 13? I wonder, after what was kind of a scarce market, a very quiet market for Suh, despite him ending last season strong, what he ended up getting. Why was the market so scarce?
It was around $9 million and up to $10 million was what Ian said. But around and up to sounds like it's probably more like 7.5-8. So they're paying a lot less money than they would have to McCoy and a lot less money than Suh had.
Well, and Suh, who obviously was with the Dolphins previously, they mentioned the lingering always a favorable perk for these players, the no state tax in Florida.
Oh.
The anti-perk is you're now wearing a Bucs uniform, which is an eyesore at best.
It's interesting, those two guys. I didn't even think about that. They were taking one spot apart of the draft. And they kind of have very similar future Hall of Fame resumes, which I think people aren't going to think of Gerald McCoy as a potential Hall of Famer. I think Suh has a pretty good chance, but they've had very similar careers. I don't know where McCoy's going, though.
Browns and Colts have been mentioned.
Colts are interesting because he's, you know, he was drafted to play in a Tampa 2 scheme.
Right.
And Matt Eberflus runs about the closest thing to a Tampa 2 scheme there is in the NFL. I think he'd be a great fit there. Sort of like that Justin Houston signing. You take a guy toward the end of his career who can still play and want to have a chance to win.
And on social media, Gerald McCoy today said that he still loves the Bucs. He's going to return to the Bucs one day. He'll retire as a Buc. So despite things seeming a little bit off with Bruce Arians once he arrived and things ending abruptly, McCoy appears to see it as just, you know, it's part of the business. Ooh, part of the business in the NFL, you got to keep your nose clean. Patrick Peterson, unable to do it. The cornerback is suspended 6 games to open the 2019 season for violating the NFL's performance-enhancing drug policy, the league announced Thursday. So when I said keep your nose clean, I don't want, Mark, I know immediately you're thinking booger sugar. No, this is nothing to do with substance abuse.
Thank
that
you
kind.
For clarifying that.
And I don't want anyone to think I'm saying Patrick Peterson had that issue.
Right.
This was a PED ban. It is a suspension that will keep him out until week 7 against the Giants. And it will be the first games that Peterson will miss in his 9-year career. So, Colleen, this is a big setback, obviously, for the Cardinals. This is their best player. And also for Peterson, who's had a rough go of it. He's upset with the Cardinals. He wasn't practicing with the team, and now he's not going to be playing
right
until October.
And baseline is 4 games, but it's 6 because they found the masking agent as well with it.
Ooh.
So bang twice there. But for the Cardinals, they were supposed to – the defense was supposed to be like the one thing that they could sort of hang their hat on. Everything else is sort of a work in progress with them. You don't know. You have obviously first-year head coach, first-year quarterback, a lot of different moving parts on the offense. So the defense was supposed to be, you know, their thing. And without Patrick Peterson, that's their best guy on defense. There's a lot more questions now about the entire team.
Yeah, it makes you wonder if that's why they took a cornerback in the second round, Byron Murphy,
right,
who's going to have to play right away.
Yeah, because Peterson had some weird social media stuff earlier where it seemed like he was mad at the team.
That's
and
right.
My thought was there's some, you know, now looking back, that probably had to do with him getting the notification or he wasn't happy with the team's reaction to him getting that notification, because this process usually takes months.
There is like an interesting fold to this. Like Dan Bickley, who's from 98.7 in Arizona, reported that Peterson has type 2 diabetes and took this as a counter because he was feeling sluggish like he did a couple years ago from that condition. And then the banned substance was involved in whatever he took to deal with the diabetes, and that's where the appeal came from. So that's a more compelling retort than some players seem to have for their ups and downs with this PED business.
You know what? When I put together, like, did their starting lineup for the projected start, I looked at it, I was like, well, you know what? The Cardinals, they're kind of spicy. Like, they're not that bad a roster. If Kingsbury delivers at all on offense, they were an average defense a year ago, and I think I kind of like the moves that they made on defense this offseason. They added Terrell Suggs, Robert Alford was cheap, but Buda Baker's getting better. Swearinger was a good pickup late last year. You have Chandler Jones. You have Jordan Hicks. It's like, Darius Phylon was a guy kind of always liked with the Chargers. It's like, I just looked at that and was like, there's, you know, Vance Joseph's their coordinator. I don't know about him, if he's going to get them together. But you got that. You got a little Kingsbury. And I'm thinking, like, is it that crazy to think this team wins 7 or 8 games? I don't know.
It's one way to view it. Another one is, do you really want your defense to feature 3 over 30 guys cut by the Falcons this offseason?
All right. Who else? Alford?
He's back from the wedding and he's hot.
Brooks Reed, Terrell McClain.
All right. Well, those guys are back. You know, those guys might not even make the card.
I mean, Terrell Suggs will be 37. All these guys are on the wrong side of 30.
Wes is saying 6-10.
Six and ten is a huge improvement.
I think they were
quietly one of the worst 3-13 teams of all time. Like, they could have easily been a 1 or 0 win team. That's how bad the Cardinals were.
Terrible setback for Reuben Foster, the troubled linebacker who had all his off-the-field domestic violence issues, led to his release by the Niners, and he was claimed by the Redskins. Probably not going to see him on the field in 2019. The linebacker is believed to have suffered a torn ACL in his left knee, plus additional damage, Rap Sheet reported on Monday, and it was actually later confirmed it was an ACL tear, and there was worry that it was some other major potential complications with the knee injury. So it's a terrible injury for Foster. It happened during the first day of Redskins OTAs on Monday. He was pushed to the ground, had to be taken off the field on an air cast. He was crying and, you know, pounding the turf. Always all those terrible signifiers when you know a guy is aware that his body is, you know, betrayed him in a bad way. So Foster and the Redskins in year one, probably not going to see it happen.
That's a big loss, even though he's never even played for them. And when you have him on the team, I don't think you can count on him being a 16-game guy even before the injury. But now they have to go with one of the 3-name guys on their backups, Josh Harvey Clemens or Sean Dion Hamilton.
And they're concerned that the additional damage – potentially is artery related, which is the same thing that ended Zach Miller's career. Not that it's that serious, but it is a major injury.
And he's had major injuries before. And you don't want to get too too much on your high horse here. But on this podcast, when the Redskins signed him so quickly after his domestic violence.
It was like 3 days.
We all raised the question, what is the rush here? Why do you need to do something like this so quickly before, you know, everything comes out and the league decides what they want to do? And, you know, if you were into bad voodoo or anything like that, karma, it's like, well, I don't know. The Redskins didn't get anything out of this.
They took a huge risk. They got crushed for it. And now he's not going to play until at least 2020.
Let's check in with my beloved and failing New York Jets, who the last time we spoke on this show.
In New York City.
Good to do it.
That should have been in the reception playlist.
Missed out.
By the way, how do I follow that playlist?
Oh, I can.
Is that on Spotify?
Oh, yeah. It is on Spotify.
Great news.
It was fire.
It was so, so, so good.
I tried to get a back-to-back Enya offering.
You
remember
told
that?
Was coming.
I spent like 15 minutes with the DJ, and you
my
hired
man
a good DJ.
My man Paxton, who is great.
Yes. He would not bend. I said I had to go through Lakeisha and like five Lakeisha bridesmaids. No.
Having gone to, you know, many weddings and high school dances, one of the most important things a DJ has to do, especially a wedding DJ, because, and Wes is a lover of music, as is Lakeisha, and I was the same way, when you are curating a playlist for a wedding, you put a lot of thought into it. You have months and months to get it going. And then you got some drunken jabronis on Chardonnay. Not you necessarily, but in this case, yes.
I mean, this is a long-standing hit of this podcast.
That's a specifically, yeah.
Yeah,
that's
but
Mark.
But a lot of, you know, whether it's women or men going up to the DJ saying, play this, play that. Well, you got to respect the husband and wife. That they really want the playlist to go off how they imagined it to be. So shout out to Paxton for doing the move where you just go, oh, yeah, definitely, I got you, and then never playing it.
Well, if I remember correctly, I included at least three Sessler-specific songs on the playlist.
Was one of those
Tatiana?
Yeah, that was great. Toto,
I don't even know what that is.
Toto, when Africa came on, that feels like a Sessler song.
I was waiting for Wynwood.
Wynwood was on my list. We might have just run out of time.
That happens. That's the other thing that happens.
Sure, another way to read your comments would be, yeah, it's short-sighted to leave Enya off the mix. Mm-hmm.
I wasn't going to say it. It's his wedding.
T.I. made it.
I think I
made the decision.
I included Call on Me.
That was a great one.
Played. That was for you specifically.
That would have been
Wes, you did. You don't need to. No apologies.
Mark, deeply disappointed in the reception.
No, it was. You got us dancing.
I put Len on there. Steal My Sunshine. I don't know if that
got played. I did not hear that.
All right. So last time we were on the show, the Jets had just shockingly fired their general manager. So let's get an update on that. We've heard, of course, that the Jets have been connected with Joe Douglas, the Eagles front office executive. Daniel Jeremiah, move the sticks, has been connected. Peyton Manning's name got floated into the mix. And now this is a bit of a strange report. It came from Manish Mehta of the Daily News that Peter Schrager, who is of course, sideline reporter for Fox, but also one of the, you know, main personalities on Good Morning Football here on NFL Network, that he is involved somehow with the search for the GM.
Schrager bomb.
And Mehta wrote in the Daily News that Schrager has been mentioned as a potential resource in internal discussions, according to a team source. The feeling is that the Jets believe they could turn to Schrager for opinions, suggestions, and or intel on quality candidates if they needed help. Brian Costello of the New York Post also reports that a Jets source said that while the team respects Peter Schrager, the only conversations the team has had with the broadcaster are about him working on their preseason telecasts. And this is where I'll say, before I throw it to you, it doesn't matter what the story is, what this wonderful NFL media, all they need is the bit here, which is the Jets are so lost that they're turning to the Good Morning Football guy. Everybody have their jokes. Now I'll turn it to you guys to have your jokes. Doesn't matter what the truth is, but that's the funny story. Go ahead. Have your fun.
You're so salty about this.
Wow.
Well, I mean, they went to Charlie Casserly an ex-GM, obviously, but also a media man at this point for their last GM.
He was officially a consultant.
Absolutely.
In choosing his guy, Mike Maccagnan.
Right.
Go to Peter Schrager next. We aren't that far away from you. So you can't be, Dan, you can't be that upset about
it. I like to try to drill down. What is exactly happening here? Because, okay, Christopher Johnson and Schrager are close friends, according to Manish Mehta.
Which is interesting in of itself.
That's interesting, too. And probably annoying to Schrager that this is getting out there. So when I think about, like, what is happening here? Manish, who is reporting this, knows this is vaguely embarrassing to the Jets. That he's putting it out there, that they're talking to Schrager. Once I had a second to think about it, it's like, this happens all the time. Why do you think sources talk to these insiders? Lots of owners and general managers and front offices are talking to Ian Rappaport and Adam Schefter and Peter Schrager about their either information. It's more about information. They know things about all these different candidates and also their opinions. And they're one of the people that might be a sounding board. I'm not saying they're making any decisions, but they're in the information gathering stage. So if Schragbaum happens to be close friends, according to Mehta, it's not that shocking to me. The more interesting thing is actually that it's getting put out there almost in a way to embarrass the Jets.
Purposely leave Mike Garofalo off your little list of people.
No.
Little list.
Mike G is definitely getting in the mix, but he's so smart, he's just under the radar.
There's a mountain of difference between doing your due diligence,
right,
getting as much information as possible, and letting the morning co-host of Good Morning Football actually make your GM decision for you. And we're not hearing that he's actually making the call for who they're going to hire.
He's assistants and prospective candidates. I mean, it's not that crazy because you know who knows more about GM candidates than just about anyone? Is Ian and Adam Schefter and Peter Schrager.
Right.
Guys,
the other flip side of what they do is they can go to a list of candidates, get a soft kind of response to how they feel about maybe looking at the Jets and saying, absolutely not happy with where I am. We already know of a number of coaching candidates that have told Ian in the past, I'm not interested in doing this or taking this step yet. And then you can prevent it from becoming public where the Jets go through a laundry list of people that aren't interested.
I mean, it is funny. The one thing I think following these types of processes that if you're on the outside, you think these owners or even sometimes it's a coach or whatever, like, that they're so smart that they know anything more than you. They don't know the candidates. They know less. Like, they don't know who the good GM candidates are. So Chris Johnson's in this spot where, all right, do I just listen to what Adam Gase is telling me? Or, because how the hell else do I know? They don't know any more than you guys that are listening to this podcast. They really don't.
They have an entire
and so they need to have
system
a sort
within
of,
the building. It's not just a vacuum, just Adam Gase or nothing for Chris Johnson. But I see your point.
At this point, it sort of is, though. Who's their front office?
I think, a lot of assumptions. And, yes, the Jets fan of me is stepping in here a little bit, too. There are a lot of assumptions about what's going on inside the Jets building. And the assumption is it's as terrible as possible because that's the fun story to talk about in our business. I'm used to it. But I don't think
that's happened that much with this story, has it? We're not.
I was going to say, for the very casual fan out there, Peter Schrager looks like the man. Like, for people who are not,
I think it's a good look for Peter.
Yeah.
You might be right about him not wanting to know about potential friendships with an owner of
sure.
a team and all that. But he is a respected guy. He's had a great career, Peter. So, you know, we'll see. And there is no rush, by the way, to hire a GM.
Now, if they hired Schrager to be the GM, then
right. that's totally different.
I mean, I love you, Schragbaum, but that would be a problem.
Other Jets news, the first move by interim GM Adam Gase was to get rid of another one of Mike Maccagnan's draft picks. The linebacker Darren Lee was traded to the Chiefs last week in exchange for a 2020 sixth-round pick. Rap Sheet reported this late Wednesday night. Lee had lost his starting job when C.J. Mosley was signed, never really seemed to find his footing, but also a guy with some upside still, despite being a disappointing first-round pick. Maybe the Chiefs can get some value out of him.
I think that's a good fit. When I looked at the Chiefs linebackers, they seemed more suited to inside linebacker for a 3-4 where they were thumpers, and I think Lee offers some more athleticism. Not a bad.
And it should be added that he suspended the first four games.
Right.
For violating the substance abuse policy.
The fact that he did that, Gase traded him the day that they fired Maccagnan, it was kind of Yeah. I mean, a not-so-subtle power move.
Not at all.
And to me, a little bit of a signal to whoever's coming in, like, who's the boss here? I'm the boss. I'm not saying he's sending that message, but, like, that's the message that any GM candidate should be receiving is, like, Adam Gase is the boss. He's off making trades on his own before anyone even gets there.
That does not make that an attractive landing spot.
Not for everyone.
It feels like it was a move that was being held up by McKagnon.
Right. They apparently was like a round difference.
Well, because it's his first round. You can look at the lack of pass rush as a clear reason that Mike McKagnon is not there anymore. And Darren Lee was the figure of that, you know, the face of that nonsense.
Julian Edelman and the Patriots do some business. A 2-year deal worth $18 million, $12 million guaranteed, also an $8 million signing bonus. So the Patriots, who have a lot of work to do, of course, on the offensive side of the ball with Gronk's retirement. Well, Edelman has been, since about 2013, one of the most important players on the Patriots, and despite his advanced age, he has showed an ability to just get open. And the Patriots believe he'll be able to do that for another couple of years.
He's earned it. He's one of those guys. He came in as a project who was kind of like a trick player, learning a new position. And then I think his first shot at free agency, nobody would pay him because he was coming off several injured seasons.
He was going to join the Giants and change his mind at the last second.
And he didn't get much from the Patriots compared to what you would think he would get. And I think that's where it starts with a lot of these players who are drafted late in the draft or undrafted free agents. It's hard to ever get that huge payday.
This is one of the only times you'll ever see in Patriots – that's ever happened in Patriots history, that they just gave money to someone because they deserved it. Because they could have – he still had another year on his contract. That's normally what they do. They've done it a couple times. They kind of gave Welker a little extra at the end. It's kind of like, hey, you just had 300 – and 80 yards in the playoffs for us, one of the great receiver runs of all time, we're going to give you a little extra money.
Well, and they get away with
it. They almost never do something sentimental. They've done it like a couple times because Edelman was so underpaid.
It's not overly sentimental, though, right, in the sense that $9 million per year puts him right in line with John Brown,
right,
Quincy Enunwa, and an aging DeSean Jackson. He's been a little bit more valuable than those figures.
Right.
Edelman turns 33 today.
Oh, my God, happy birthday.
Erica, anything you want to say on Julian Edelman's 33rd birthday?
Yeah, just happy birthday. Love you.
Thanks for the shirt.
Yeah, thanks for the
shirt. I mean,
shirt.
As he moved
It's a nice
ahead,
shirt, actually. Nice fit.
With everything that's
soft.
Happened with
fit well in my garbage can.
I love it, sleeping in that Edelman shirt. I just
gross.
Feel like the championship gross. Vibe. Ah! Has he moved ahead of Danny Amendola to you just on the kind of your – in your heart?
No. Heart ranking?
No. Okay. Because no. Danny's had some rough moments.
Yeah, he has. Yeah.
Maybe, you know, good-looking guy, maybe not like a good guy. You know, he's some personality traits that have been exposed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Julian Edelman, I don't know anything about Julian Edelman.
He's a great father.
He keeps his business kind of to himself.
Yeah.
He's a great father.
Not a PED man, but, you know, that happens in this league.
Come on.
He's a great father, according to his own Instagram account. Like everyone's Instagram account.
Moving on. Dallas Cowboys star running back Ezekiel Elliott was handcuffed
like
by
no one
police.
Puts a post up. It's like, didn't pick up my kid from school today.
Just, well, all would be a weird thing.
I just didn't even want to. Here's a picture of me, like, drinking a beer.
Didn't want to.
All great fathers through history announced
that's
it.
That's my
couldn't be bothered. Too much going on in my dad world, minus my kids.
Handcuffed by police but not arrested after a scuffle involving event staff at a Las Vegas music festival. The 23-year-old running back detained briefly early Saturday during the Electric Daisy Carnival. Mm. Have you been to that one, Connie? You travel a lot.
I've missed that somehow.
At the Las Vegas Motor Speedway, a cell phone video posted by TMZ appeared to show Elliott speaking with a woman and then with several security and event staff members, including one who falls backwards over a metal parking area barricade.
Yikes.
And Zeke appeared to kind of get in that guy's face, and the guy fell. Not arrested, but I, come on, Zeke. Some of the stuff with him in the offseason would make me nervous, especially a guy that's
trying to get paid.
Yeah, you can't be doing that. Also, you can't be wearing a fanny pack and a LeBron James Lakers jersey while doing it. I mean, there's just so many bad things.
That's a great call.
The TMZ.
I don't know what's worse.
It's bad. It's bad all around.
The article makes it clear the guy did not press charges, and they were they were holding him around for the guy too, and he decided not to, and like that changed
his interaction
story.
With the guy is pretty minor. You see
right.
the whole thing. He
right.
gives him a little forearm, but the guy falls back. The bigger thing is
it was very Electric Daisy carnival-esque.
Yes.
The whole,
it was, but
that's the first thing I thought.
It's a different era, and this is a guy who's been suspended for domestic violence and fought against that, and the Cowboys quickly came out after this and said, we know what is in Zeke's heart. We know he's a good guy. And it's just a different time, 2019, that you can have videos on you because it's uncomfortable watching the video. He gets in his reported girlfriend's way from walking where she has to kind of turn around because he's like, you know, it's
shouldn't
just
be doing that. Yep.
It's
TMZ is everywhere.
It's everywhere, and you can't get, you know, you can't get away with that.
Whoa.
Hey, we're very casual.
Very
on the
comfortable
show
on the show. That's what
Tybee time.
Uh-oh. That's what we bring here at the show.
I mean, I'm Tybee.
Four guys in the car.
I was driving a
bad
golf
boy.
I drove a golf cart back and forth from Wayne's house to my room and back. And
that's Tybee.
I wish actually we had a picture of that. I picked Mark up in his tuxedo in the golf cart, and then we went over to meet. I wish someone had.
I would say outside,
of Mark in a tuxedo on the side of the
outside
golf
of Greg
cart.
And I, you know, jogging past Anderson Cooper. That had to be the second most, you know, intimate bonding moment that Greg and I have had.
I didn't know that you had a golf cart. I got stuck on some dirt road that was closed and got.
I borrowed Wayne's. They let me use it for that one because we didn't want to walk over all sweaty in the tuxes and stuff.
There's a lot of dirt roads on Tybee.
The first night at the house. I went to pick something up, and Colleen's like, oh, yeah, I'm ready to go to Tybee, too. I was like, hey, okay, let's go for a walk.
Huckaboos.
Huckaboos. I said, I know a little shortcut from the house that will put us right in front of Huckaboos, essentially. I walked and had no problem, but then when I brought Colleen, all of a sudden, you know, there's like a bunch of
– there was like thorns.
Thorns and stuff, and Colleen got
it was like
a
barbed wire fence, and Dan had jeans and sneakers on, and well, I had shorts and sandals.
I got those thorns. I ruined the nice Converse sneakers that Wes got with one trip to Huckapoo's and a walk back. It's like now there's all sorts of
just throw them in the washer with bleach, and you'll be fine. Take the toothbrush to them.
Happy trails, Chris Long. The defensive end is calling it a career. Two-time Super Bowl champion. In fact, he won Super Bowls in each of his final two seasons, first with Philadelphia, then with New England. He announced via Twitter on Saturday that he is calling it quits. Cheers, he wrote. He held up a solo cup, which shows an everyman vibe that, you know, we can all get behind. The 33-year-old Long ends on a high note after receiving the 2018 Walter Payton NFL Man of the Year award this past February. And he had a really nice career. Finished with 70 sacks, 15 forced fumbles in 11 seasons, played a lot, 162 out of 176 games. His teams went 7-1 in the postseason. He spent the first 8 years of his career with the St. Louis Rams, who took him second overall in the 2008 NFL draft out of Virginia. And yes, he'll be remembered as much for his playing as for his off-the-field activities. He was very outspoken on issues facing this country, he's like an A-plus dude. Everyone that's ever come in contact or talked about or wrote about Chris Long says only great things about him.
I knew this was coming, but it still made me upset when I heard about it. And I wanted to talk about it when it happened. We were all sitting around the fire pit.
Oh, right.
And yeah. And it's just, he was one of the most honest players, too. He called Philadelphia the best sports city in America.
Oh, and he botched that a little bit. But
and listen, he knows what he's talking about. I trust everything he says.
I think Howie and Diane Long have raised some interesting, selfless, thoughtful sons. And Chris Long is up there with, you know, at the top. What he's done in Africa with the water wells, what he's done for college kids. I mean, this guy... he's one of my favorite players of the last decade.
And he has, what a interesting career arc that he's this number two overall pick that had his ups and downs with the Rams, and he wins titles with the Patriots and Eagles. I mean, his last season, you know, they didn't get a title, but he went off on a high note. 8 sacks, 15 hits, 30 hurries, and 600 snaps. He was playing at a super high level, like late in his career, which you don't see too much.
Also, you know, he was taken number two overall after the first overall pick was Jake Long. We will live 12 lifetimes before the 1 and 2 pick in the draft are last name Long and Long.
Long odds.
Mm-hmm. Also nice. Had some incredible comments about Bill Belichick and what he learned with New England, which ultimately probably helped him in Philadelphia.
True.
Go check that out. Find him. It's easy to Google. I'm not going to go through it. gave me some insight into Bill Belichick, too.
Speaking of the fire pit night, Nick, who despite the cornhole back and forth, which got dicey at times and heated, is a great guy, and I had a great time with him all weekend. He was at the fire pit, and he started to talk about the dynamic of the podcast, and he looked at it like a family. And he said that I was like the daddy. Greg was like the mommy.
This is Keisha's brother who had.
Oh, it was Keisha's brother.
Right.
Cedric. Okay.
Cedric, yeah.
So everything about Nick that I said, wiped
still
that away.
True.
No, I did not have a good time.
I really liked it.
But Cedric, Keisha's brother.
Still in his head.
Another great guy. Said that I was like the daddy. Greg was the mommy, which actually makes some sense. Then called Mark kind of like a child. But then he corrected himself and said that Wes was the real child, which, and I wrote this down when it happened, which prompted Mark with daggers in his eyes to say, so that makes me the unreal child?
Cedric and Nick were like my two favorite people outside of that commentary by Cedric.
They were, yeah. Uh-huh. He was saying you were kind of like the wild child that's off.
Like the rebellious
wild child sounds better than just, oh, he's the real child and you don't really have a childlike title.
And I was the mom. There's something to this theory, this entire theory here.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is, for better or worse. It is a family unit. What does that make Connie?
I don't know.
An aunt. She's like, yeah. Aunt
I'm an auntie.
Connie.
Or like the babysitter. That was like whenever
aunt,
I played house.
You say
aunt.
Auntie Little Box.
You say aunt or aunt, Wes?
I say aunt.
I think that's aunt. Right. You're the super fun aunt who kind of flies in and like everyone's
favorite. I'm the
favorite.
Fun aunt.
Yeah,
I'm
are.
The cool
you're
cool aunt.
Everyone's favorite because you only are here for like the good times. You're not going to be here during, you know, you just fly in, have some fun, and then
yep.
you're out.
You're cool aunt.
Aunt Ollie. Tiny Box, yeah. ATV.
ATV is
aunt
weird.
Box.
Aunt or aunt, Erica?
I say aunt.
You do?
Yeah, because one time I said aunt, ouch. And my aunt was like, an aunt is a little thing that crawls on the ground.
I say aunt. That's like a New
like,
England
whoa.
Thing, I think.
Aunt.
Wow, she really fired back
yeah.
at you there.
Ooh, scarred me.
We gotta keep moving here, guys, but I just want to say that Lisa knows how important rest is to a better life. Lisa is the foundation of a healthier, happier you. All Lisa products have been thoughtfully designed to go beyond creating a comfortable bed and to transform your bedroom into a sanctuary you want to spend time with. You know, talk about that standard Lisa mattress. It's the most popular multi-layer foam mattress. It's made with premium foams for cooling, contouring, and pressure-relieving support. I have one. Gave it to my son. And my son loves me because of it.
Is he spending time in his sanctuary?
Always. Jack despised me before I got the Lisa mattress. Wouldn't even look me in the eyes. And now he says that I am the father figure he always wanted.
That is quite the
That's
testimonial.
That's amazing.
Thank you, Lisa.
And by the way, Lisa donates one mattress for every 10 they sell through Yeah, eat that, Chris Long. What's your mattress charity game? Sell through organizations that work in causes like foster care prevention. Like, don't joke about Chris Long. Don't say anything.
Well, all right. I mean, that is a straw man of straw mans. That's
to date, they've donated more than 32,000 mattresses through more than 1,000 nonprofits. I'm sure Chris Long has a sense of humor about himself.
Do you think
he has? I can't help
it
if no one has a sense of humor about Chris Long. Let me get through this ad. It's like, God, he's really gone off the rails. Chris Long doesn't deserve this. Hey, by the way, don't miss out. Live healthier, happier by resting deeper. Order today and get 15% off your purchase for a limited time at lisa.com/around and use promo code around. That's LEESA.com/around.
Whew, you did it.
Finally in the news. Sorry, everybody. Personal apology from me. Finally in the news, Hayden Hurst, the Ravens tight end, he's asking for help to find the one that got away.
Oh.
One of those situations. I don't know, Mark, have you ever had a situation like this where you saw a woman that really, it was before, of course, Simone, that you saw her at a subway or, you know, at a library or at a tavern, and all you could think about was, I can't let her get away. I don't even know her, but I got to track her down and see if there's anything there between us. Did you ever have anything like that in your life? Be honest.
Sure, but I would say that anything attached to that vanished and was gone the minute I was
happened.
Married. The minute I was married, did any of those concepts, they all...
You seem like a man. Have you ever spent any time on the missed connections.
I was going to say that, Greg. Oh,
missed connections on Craigslist is like, well, they've wiped out so much of Craigslist.
I mean,
but
back
missed
in the
connections
day, back in the
is
day, yeah.
one of the great reads out there when you're trying to kill some time. And it, because we're all probably truly egotist to some level, you read those and you think, this might be aimed at me. It might be the thing that they're talking about where we looked at each other through a subway, even though I'm not even sure I was in that part of the city. That is a disturbing aspect to that.
So here's the Hayden Hurst story. The tight end for the Ravens, after failing to connect on a recent flight to Baltimore, Hurst tweeted a note, this is from the New York Post, to a, quote, gorgeous mystery woman. Here was the tweet. To the gorgeous tall brunette on my flight to Baltimore, you walk incredibly fast and I couldn't catch up, but here's hoping you have a Twitter, hashtag the one that got away, prayer hands. As of this podcast, we do not have a love connection.
I know what he needs.
What does he need?
A little Frank Signetti.
Frank Signetti, private eye. That's a great idea. But isn't that, once this quote-unquote gorgeous tall brunette, if she found out a PI was searching for her, that would you would be a little freaked out if a guy did that, right?
That's a bad PI, though. Like, you're not supposed to find out.
That's a tough case. Woman private, with brown sorry. Hair.
I would
walk very area. Fast, like she could have been trying to walk away.
I would submit that if she's truly a gorgeous tall brunette, this connection might not be as special as Hayden Hurst thinks it is. Mm. She probably had at least, you know, dozens of men who think they shared a special moment with a gorgeous person.
That's true.
Sorry,
you never hear a guy like a pro tight end be like, ah, I saw, you know, 4'9", had a mole on the face, you know, a little overweight.
Little mousy.
But I could tell by her energy she was glowing that we need to hook up.
And finally, in the news, Tyrann Mathieu, the
mole's
Chiefs
taking
safety.
A shot in a big spot.
Big spot. They always do, though. Honey Badger was the victim of a $5 million extortion attempt by a family member, according to federal court documents. The person, tough name.
Jorvan Sears, I believe it
I mean,
is.
You don't need the name.
Jorvan Kenny.
Distant Sears, relative, distant cousin.
21 years old, is accused of threatening to reveal personal information about Mathieu, according to the documents from the district court in Louisiana. Sears allegedly ordered Honey Badger in April to put $1.5 million in his bank account within a week before upping the demand to $5 million. Sears allegedly said he would contact TMZ if he did not receive the money. He also allegedly sent a text message to friends of Honey Badger that said, I want $1.5 million by Friday or I am going to kill all you all.
Oh.
He also said that Mathieu's agent to he also told Mathieu's agent that he planned to make a sexual misconduct allegation against Honey Badger, and very wise of the Honey Badger that he went straight to the authorities with this and got ahead. That's how you got to get ahead of a situation like that, because that is scary stuff.
Ending on a light note here.
Yeah.
Whew. I mean, it does. It's like the most extreme example possible of like some of the things that you hear that athletes have to go through with family
with
members
families, yeah.
and friends, like coming out of the woodwork. It's like, I don't know.
That seems like about the worst case scenario.
I mean, I think that he also left a voicemail threatening to – I mean –
it's a lot of evidence, too, that they're leaving.
Yeah, not the brightest.
TMZ,
it's a bad plot. Maybe. TMZ Sports reported 21 hours ago that Honey Badger proposed to a longtime girlfriend with epic $250,000 ring.
There you go. Now it ends on a happy note news.
That's great.
I like
congrats.
That.
Good job.
Should she say yes?
Badger.
She say yes?
Looks like it.
Longtime girlfriend, also a former New Orleans Pelicans dancer.
Really?
Hello.
How do you have to know that information off the top of your head?
Because I was looking at this story and saw the same thing
Well-versed.
And they've been together for 6 years, girlfriend. So she's been great. All around the NBA.
That's great.
Different dancers.
All right, now it is time. That's what's happening in the news, or the main portion of the news. But with Colleen here, it's perfect because we have more to hit. So,
oh, great.
How about, Connie, a little bit of odds and ends?
Hit it. Odds and ends. Odds and ends. Hey, everybody. Tell your friends. It's odds and ends. Shoot, that was too early.
That was close, though.
Very close.
That's the closest I think you've ever gotten. Hit the music, Ricky Hollywood.
Every time.
Jerry Hughes got a 2-year contract and extension, $23 million through 2021 from the Buffalo Bills. Greg, you're excited.
They won that trade. Kelvin Shepard for Jerry Hughes back in 2013. Give Doug Whaley his due.
Mark, Bills tight end Tyler Kroft suffered a broken foot during the team's organized team activities Monday. Required surgery. 3 to 4 month recovery pushes him up against week one. Bummer.
Their other tight end, Jason Kroom, also hurt during OTAs. Why are we even doing OTAs? A lot of pressure on Dawson Knox, third rounder, to step up if they cannot get back on the field.
Wow, that was pretty good. Andrew Luck suffered a calf injury. The Colts say it's minor. He'll be reevaluated next week. Colleen, what do you do? Just put him on IR to be safe?
Yeah, just do it.
Wow. Nick Bosa also hurt his hamstring. That's going to be reevaluated. And Matt Breida of the Niners also has a partially torn pec. Keep an eye on those. Bobby Wagner will attend OTAs, but he won't practice because he wants a new deal, Wes. Give him that money, right? Come on.
He wants to be the highest paid linebacker in the league, and he should be.
Ravens signed Shane Ray and Michael Floyd. Greg, Michael Crabtree's like, come on, I could have done better than Michael Floyd.
Michael Floyd's back in the show. I think we said we were done with Michael Floyd, but he's getting tagged on to Shane Ray.
And Scott Pioli resigned from the Falcons front office.
Maybe to the Jets. Maybe to the Pats. Ooh. He wants another job.
Nicely done. That was a good one. Very good.
I can't believe we didn't get to the Game of Thrones ending.
Do you have something to say?
Do you have something? Can I just say, before you do this, can we please not let this devolve into 10 minutes of Game of Thrones talk from a show where almost none of us watch the show?
I feel like I've had to be a voice for the people that really do listen
and that's
watch
good.
That show.
That's fine.
Okay? Because I feel like they have not been well represented on this show.
On the box.
I think the ending of that show was complete shit.
Oh.
I agree 100% with Aaron Rodgers. Bran did nothing to deserve to become king. Why wouldn't you give it to Jon Snow? His watch already ended. He saved the world, he's the rightful owner to... Yeah, spoiler alert. We should let people know about that.
No, they had
please,
enough time.
Please.
He should be... He's the rightful heir to the throne. So, whatever. What? He has to go back to the wall? That sucks.
It's too big to fail. They threw so much money at this show.
That was passion.
They threw so much money at these final... this final season, and the cinematography and spectacle can be breathtaking on the show.
Yeah.
But they leaned way too heavily on it in the last season, and the writing was atrocious. Mm-hmm. I hated it. Bran was a boring character the whole time. Oh. Did not deserve this. It just left a lot of people wanting more.
Bran the Broken? That's who your
break.
King is going to be?
By the way, those two writers now attached to a Star Wars trilogy. Awesome. What could go wrong? Mm.
Okay, so that's it. Mm. That's all.
David Benioff wrote a great novel.
You feel better?
Yeah, I do.
City of Thieves. Like, yeah. He's quite a writer.
Maybe he should have spent less time with City of Leaves and the new Star Wars show that he's currently penning instead of working on Game of Thrones.
It was published 10 years ago.
I'm working on a novel called City of Leaves. It's going to be very engrossing. All right. That's it. Good catch-up show. Again, Chris, congratulations to you and your wonderful wife.
Congrats, Lakeisha. What a beautiful bride.
Thank you.
Oh, that dress. Hey, now. Mm.
You did it, Wes.
I am blessed.
And now you get your nice honeymoon next week, and then it's over. Then you got a lot of work to do. Now, a lot of rewarding work, but the train keeps rolling. You know, now you got the wedding out of the way.
I think your June prediction was pretty much on point.
June.
For new listeners, that was the engagement, the wedding, and then a child was your prediction.
Then a child again.
Mm. Yeah, four straight Junes. Mm.
2 for 2.
Wow.
All right. So yes, that's great. I am speaking of dream vacations. I am loading up the family SUV and heading to Legoland tomorrow.
Oh, yes.
Yes, my son Jack has successfully pooped in the potty 20 straight times without an accident.
And
because of that, he is being rewarded with this trip. And that's how you parent, Wes. Mm. Come to me.
Carrot and stick.
Carrot and stick.
Hey, what about me? Where's my trip?
Well, you had
I've been pooping in that potty for years.
Well, you're the mom.
Don't forget. Well, Sunday after the
Mark
wedding.
Mark can go to Legoland.
Yes, okay. I'll go with you.
So I won't be in on Friday, but I believe Steve Weiss will be stepping in to the Zeuser's chair. So, Connie, thank you for joining us this week.
Thanks for having me, gang.
We can't be having you around too much longer. I imagine the summer of Tiny Box is about to kick off.
It has already kicked off. I'm in the middle of it.
Good.
Right now.
But you're going to start traveling the world with Gonzo. I mean.
July. Yeah.
After the NBA season. All right. Good. Good show. Let's go. Dan Hansa signing off for Quiet Storm. The mailman. The married man. Connie Fox. The old boss of Ricky Hollywood behind the glass. Till Friday.